Coming to you from Indianapolis, Indiana, the gaming capital of the world, it's episode 36 of Game On with Cody and John. On this episode's big deal, the GM Academy. Cody gives us his sage advice for GMs in training like me. And on this episode's Buy, Try, or Deny, claustrophobia. Will you be a buyer or seller in the real estate market of hell? All this and much more on Game On with Cody and John. Well, howdy, gamers. It is Game On with Cody and John. I'm Cody.
And I'm John. Welcome to the Uncommon Podcast for the Common Gamer. We're a podcast about all sorts of tabletop games, board games, card games, and role-playing games. Coming to you from beautiful, chilly Indianapolis, Indiana.
Playoffs!
Playoffs! It's playoffs time.
That's right. We will, by the time you listen to this, dear listener, we will have hopefully thrashed the Baltimore Ravens.
I sure hope so.
Or the professional football franchise from Baltimore.
Exactly.
Yeah, since they don't call us the Colts. No, whatever.
But yeah, we're, you know, the Colts had a really good season this year, even though they lost those last two games.
It's all right. It's playoff time now.
That's so. Right. So getting on with gaming stuff, it's the first show of 2010 for Game On with Cody.
Absolutely.
Do you feel any different?
Nope.
How are your New Year's resolutions going?
Fine, I guess. I mean, I'm still GMing a regular game, so I don't know really how that's working out. But.
Okay. You know, maybe in a month or two, we'll do a little follow-up there. They say that, like, when people get gym memberships, you know, because they want to go back to the gym, that there's, like, a month and a half of all these, what my friend calls resolutionists, and they're there, and then it dies off in February. So maybe in February we could do a show where we go back on our, see if we're even following any of our resolutions.
Yeah, I'll probably still be GMing.
Well, speaking of GMing, what have we got going on our big deal this episode?
Well, we have the GM Academy, and that's not the General Motors Academy, but the Game Master Academy, where John's going to be asking some questions that you fledgling game masters, and John being one of those fledgling game masters, have some questions, so I'm going to give some advice from my experience at that.
And you know, I'm a board gamer by, I was going to say by profession, but I'm mainly a board gamer, and so for you board gamers out there that aren't really so much into role-playing games, still give this show a listen, because, you know, we're going to be talking about, you know, kind of new horizons in gaming and trying out something new. That's something we want to encourage to all gamers out there. So I'm being mainly a board gamer, I've done a little bit of role-playing, and now I'm going to move into being a first-time game master. So I got Cody the Sage here who's going to be helping me out.
Yeah, and apparently a lot of people are kind of getting into this new frontier, because we've received many emails in the inbox about people saying, you know, I never really considered RPGs, but, you know, hearing it on your show, it makes me want to kind of get into it. So hopefully we can give you all some good advice.
Sure, and if we can suck more money out of your wallet, then that's we get no benefit from that.
We will stimulate the economy.
Right? It helps us to justify the fact that more money is getting sucked out of our own wallets.
Well, speaking of money getting sucked out of the wallets, we have kind of a big-ish box game for Backtrade and I.
Yeah, Claustrophobia from Asmodee just came out at the end of 2009, and it's a you know, there's a lot to it, this game.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're looking forward to giving you a review of that one, and we'll tell you whether we liked it or not. You know, storming the gates of hell, I guess, is the theme for that one.
It's a family-friendly romp through
exactly.
the gates of hell. So.
But as always, we start off with the Game On Inbox, which starts
now. The Game On Inbox.
Send us an email at gameoninbox@gmail.com.
Do it. All right, it is the Game On Inbox, and as we start the Game On Inbox, we will do what I call our due penance to the man that is our great sponsor at Myriad Games, and John's going to tell you what they've got on deck for you now.
That's right, Myriad Games, a great friendly professional game store out of Salem, New Hampshire. But
live free or die.
That's right, but available also at myriadgames.com. They also have a great series of podcasts called Myriad Games Presentations about all kinds of stuff. You know, they're actually going through sort of a backlog of their previous shows, so they just released a Session Impressions show about Battlestar Galactica.
Yep, I saw that.
They said it's been sitting in the vault for quite a while now, but it's kind of a good listen, you know, to get their impressions on that great game. And also, as I mentioned before, they have this thing called the MVP membership, where, you know, if you have a budget where you're going to be spending a certain amount of money on games anyway, you might want to give a MVP membership a try, where they'll just kind of pull the money out of your account, and then you get credit in the store that you can use. Now, one additional thing that they're going to be adding in, and they're in sort of an alpha test right now, but it's something that I think is really cool and kind of innovative, this game share program. And if you sign up for certain levels of MVP memberships, you can help to participate in this alpha test of the game share program. You have to check that out at myriadgames.com for details. But what it is, you know, for those of you that might have Netflix for movies or Gamefly for video games, where, you know, you basically can go on a website or whatever and pick a particular movie or video game, and then they just send it to you, and you play it. You know, it's like a rental, and then you just put it back into a box or a container, and then you send it back. And they want to Dan and Myriad Games wants to try doing this with board games, where you might be able to actually sort of check out a board game, even remotely. They would ship you a game, you'd be able to play it, and then I think they might even have an option where if you decided you wanted to buy it, you could of course just buy it at that point. But then you could box it up and ship it back. Again, it's in its very early form, and it's kind of an alpha test, but I think that's a revolutionary sort of idea.
I mean, we talked about how we want to make our buys more important and really maximize our gaming dollars, so there's two ways to really stretch it out and get the most out of your games.
Yeah, what a great way to try a game. So so check all that out, and they got all the details at myriadgames.com. So moving on to games that we have played.
Yeah, and, it's been a while.
It has. It's been, we took an extra week off for the holidays, so we got a little bit of extra gaming in. Cody, what have you been playing?
To think back at the holiday, I got Descent for Christmas.
No way.
I did. My brother-in-law Matt got for me, so
that is awesome.
Yep. And I also got Dominion Seaside from the in-laws, so I now have the entire Dominion trilogy, as it were.
Great. I don't have to bring it to your house anymore.
Exactly. So we played some Dominion over the holidays, and my father-in-law Tim really got into it. He really liked it.
Wow.
I was kind of surprised, but he really liked it. And so we're playing that. I know we're planning maybe some Dominion events here in the future. I got a few sets of the Treehouse.
The pyramids. Yeah. Uh-huh.
And we got the Martian Coasters and World War V game boards, the ones that require a few sets to play. And those are really fun. You know, John, not quite up John's alley, but Kaylin and I really like playing kind of a little abstract strategy.
No, I'm glad you taught me how to play them. And the Martian Coasters game especially I thought was really cool. I just, I hate to make a blanket statement about abstract strategy games, but I have not found too many of them that I'm just really gung-ho about.
Well,
but
I don't know anything about blanket statements about games.
No, not at all.
No.
Those are fun. And if you like abstract strategy games at all and light and quick games, but with some deep strategy, a lot of those Treehouse games, including Treehouse itself, is a pretty cool one.
Yeah. And I guess the other big one is my gaming group. I say my gaming group, they're typically my RPG gaming group. They don't really get much into board games, but we played Battlestar Galactica, the board game, with them. I taught it to them, and it really just caught fire. Like,
wow.
They just really, really liked it. We've played a few games. We even had John over when we played with the Pegasus expansion, and that has just been, that's the new hotness with my group. I mean, it's like the greatest game ever made, and I like playing it again.
Mm-hmm.
Though the more I play Pegasus,
here we go,
the more New Caprica seems very tacked on and just doesn't seem to work real well.
I know what you're saying.
I think in the future I may just play with everything but that, keep the new characters, keep the Pegasus, keep, the Cylon leader type stuff. But New Caprica, I may give it another shot later. But
to me, it had a little bit too much fiddliness.
Mm-hmm.
And there were too many questions raised, especially about, and I probably just need to look up on Board Game Geek, someone's probably already answered these questions. But, when you're a Cylon and you go to New Caprica, if you're a human, it's so confusing. If you're like a human player that is an unrevealed Cylon, like you haven't revealed yourself as a Cylon, and you get to New Caprica, do you reveal yourself at that time, or can you still, shoot yourself in the head basically and turn yourself into a Cylon? There was a lot of questions around that sort of a thing.
A lot of fiddly stuff.
And I think it gives the Admiral a little bit too much power.
Yeah, it's like if you can manage to be a Cylon and have that Admiral power,
you win.
Ball game's over.
Yep.
And then
that was a lot of fun. I had a great time with that game.
Yeah, we should play it more.
Yeah.
But and then finally, my D&D 4th edition game has started back up over the break. So as I play a little more of that, we'll have another Tanglefoot bag for you. But said we've just kind of started it back up after our long holiday break. So stay tuned for that.
Excellent.
What have you been playing, John?
Well, most of the stuff that you've been talking about, with the Treehouse games, and we played a game of just regular plain vanilla Flux that night, which was a lot of fun. And, you know, the main thing that I've been doing the last couple weeks is that now that I've gotten back to work from the holidays, I've been playing a lot of Dominion at work.
Yeah.
And I brought in the original Dominion, and I had played this with my buddies David and Single L last year when it, you know, when it first come out.
Mm-hmm.
And they liked it, and we played it a couple times, but it wasn't like it just sort of set their souls on fire or anything. And so I decided to bring it back out because I'm enjoying it so much. And got a four-player game of that going, and oh my gosh, it's like Magic the Gathering all over the game again with these guys. And so for several days in a row this past week, they wanted to play. And so we played the regular game, just the regular box game, for 2 days. And then on Friday, we played the Seaside, just the Seaside cards. And they just absolutely loved it. So we're really – I saw my friend Nathan did something I've never even seen anybody do in Dominion before, is that he bought so many cards that – allowed you to draw cards that every single turn he drew his entire deck.
Oh my.
He kept drawing his entire deck out. He's like, well, what am I supposed to do? All the cards are either on the table or in my hand. I don't even have a discard pile. So that was kind of an interesting conundrum. Yeah, he didn't win that game.
No, I didn't
think so. But really enjoying Dominion. And like Cody said, I think we're going to be putting together some sort of like an event or a tournament just for our friends here. And, you know, we'll definitely give you some details about how that went. Also had, while I was in Texas for the holidays, for Christmas and New Year's, I got to play Time's Up Title Recall twice, once with a 6-player game and once with a 10-player game. And, you know, I can't say enough good things about that game. It went really, really well. And you know, pick that one up. You know,
yeah. Oh, yeah. I played a few times that too. So that was good.
And also, I got to mention some modeling stuff since I'm into that now. And got a few War Machine figures for Christmas. My lovely wife bought me a set of Holy Zealots.
Oh, hello.
And I've got some other choir acolytes of Menoth, choir of Menoth guys, which are going to be.
I can't get those guys off my lawn, you know, the choir acolytes of Menoth that come strolling around.
I know, it's annoying, isn't it?
Shoo.
And, I mentioned that I'd gotten the Assault on Black Reach set for 40K. And so just last night, I painted my first Space Marine.
Looks good.
It looks pretty good. Yeah. It's a different deal painting plastic.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel as substantial to me, I guess. I feel more like I'm painting toys than actually painting, well, you know, metal toys.
Right.
So I'm going to get all the stuff together, and really, hopefully, listeners, within a month or so, I'll be able to give you a bit of a play session report for both War Machine and Warhammer 40K, and I'll be making my decision on which game I want to pursue pretty soon.
We are Jones Theory compliant here.
For miniatures games, that's definitely the case.
Yep.
And the other, only other thing regarding a War Machine is that the new Prime Mark II rulebook just came out about a week ago, and so I picked up a copy of that. It is beautiful. Oof. I just got the soft bound, didn't get the hardcover one.
They have a hardcover one?
They do have a hardcover one.
Yeah. You know what you might do is take your softcover one and get it spiral bound.
No. I'm okay with it. I like
it. Okay, I'm just saying, you could lay it flat.
I know you like to go to the printing shops and get them to do all the little things, but, you know. The Savage Worlds book was really cool, what you did with that. I'm just saying.
Don't try and save it.
Okay. But it's a really, really pretty rule book. The artwork in there is gorgeous, and I'm really anxious to get through the rules. Not having played the Mark I rules, I'm going to be, you know, looking at this with some fresh eyes, so I'll probably give you a little different perspective than some grizzled old War Machine player from 5 years ago who, you know, thinks that, you know, it sucks that they changed everything. So stay tuned for more of that.
Spiral binding.
Whatever.
Roll Tide.
Yeah.
All right, I wasn't going to say it.
Moving on. All right, let's get into some emails that we got in the Game On Inbox this episode. I got quite a few since we were, again, off for an additional week. And one that we want to mention to you is from our good friend Nathan Clark in New Zealand.
Oh, my gosh.
The saga continues. Between, yeah. You know, after we had Giles Pritchard on the show last time to give his perspective on the Australia versus New Zealand thing, he had a couple of comments that he wanted to make. So Nathan says that overall he thinks that Giles' comments were fair. He says, however, his theory that Kiwis secretly want to be Aussies warrants some attention. Now, when I think of absurd things in the world, a few things come to mind, such as Dog Lovers Edition Monopoly, Cat Lovers Edition Monopoly, thinking that global warming is just a big conspiracy, bowling underarm in cricket.
Yeah, that's crazy.
I have no idea what that means.
I have no idea what that means.
The inclusion of Jar Jar Binks in Star Wars The Phantom Menace.
True.
Shame on George Lucas, he says. Russell Crowe winning an Oscar for The Gladiator.
I hated that movie.
And not winning for either The Insider or A Beautiful Mind.
That was such a terrible movie.
Yeah. And the last thing he said when he's thinking of absurd things in the world, Giles Pritchard not yet having his own regular podcast about board games.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
I don't know. He said, however, all of these things pale in significance to the magnitude of absurdity of Giles' theory that Kiwis secretly want to be Aussies. So, thank you, Nathan. And I just want to say, officially, we're shutting this down. I'm just going to call it.
Wow.
Can I call it?
I'm sure. You're going rogue there.
I'm just saying that... You know, we have New Zealand listeners, we have Aussie listeners, we have Kiwi listeners. Let's just all get along. You know, can't we just all get along?
Sure.
Okay. I'm just gonna call.
Okay.
So thanks to all that have contributed to this great. I'm just worried that there's gonna be some kind of missile launch or something.
You got the Olympics coming up. New Zealand's its own country. Oh man, I'm gonna get killed for this. New Zealand's its own country for the Olympics, right?
Yes.
Do they do anything for the Winter Olympics?
For the Winter Olympics, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm excited. The Olympics start on my birthday this year. So
February the 12th, right?
February the 12th. Absolutely.
Outstanding. Okay.
Get to hear all the national anthems.
Yeah, that's always fun. Yeah.
Best national anthem.
Not the United States.
No, not the United States.
I don't know. What's the best one in your book?
I don't know. Oh, Canada's pretty good.
That one is pretty good.
Les Massons, or however you'd say it, is pretty good. The French one. But I have to go with England. Maybe. England. That's just good. God save the Queen, you know.
I wonder if New Zealand has like the haka for their
Well, they're a Commonwealth, aren't they? So they would have God Save the Queen, wouldn't they? I don't know how that works. I know Canada has like they have the royal anthem, God Save the Queen. I'm getting very boring.
We're going to create a whole new segment of things that Cody and John don't know about the world.
Yeah, exactly.
Including New Zealand, so.
Yeah. God anyway, save the Queen. Solid anthem.
Sounds good, yeah. All right, so thanks again, all of you Aussies and Kiwis, and keep gaming on with us. All right, so moving on to another email from Michael Amos. And this is an important email.
Okay.
Okay. And I'm going to read this to Cody, and then he can respond.
Okay.
Hi, guys. I've recently started listening to your podcast. Thanks to the Tom Vassell fundraiser.
Welcome.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in just a second. But and I listened to both your Looney Labs episode today and the Jones Theory episode.
Okay.
I enjoyed them both, but there appears to be a conflict between them.
Oh.
Dun, dun, dun. In the Looney Labs episode, you say you would buy every Flux game, but this seems to conflict with the Jones Theory as I understand it. Which one version of Flux would you pick to bring yourselves into compliance, or do you feel there is a special exemption for Flux? And could you explain it? And that's Mike Amos.
Very good question there, Mike. I have to say, if I'll start with the one version I would pick, and that would be the regular vanilla Flux that John mentioned earlier.
Okay.
I think all the additions are kind of fun, but I have a set of regular Flux that I put all of the promo cards and special stuff into.
In a cool little box.
In a cool little wooden box, and that's my main set. As for the other versions, I have to say Looney Labs is one of those companies where... I'm fine buying their catalog because I really like the games they put out and I really like just their approach to it. So I buy it somewhat out of, this may seem like a cop out, but I buy it somewhat out of,
yeah, it kind of does.
Hey, just listen, you know, just a loyalty to the company. And every so often, like pulling out Zombie Flux for Halloween or pulling out Monty Python Flux for the right group. I know this would be, I guess, a special exemption. This is the company exemption.
You're really tap dancing here.
I kind of am. But I will say, if gun to my head, I would pick the regular version. And I have the other ones just kind of out of support for the company. And depending on the right crowd, it'll work. So that's my one exemption I get. But it's a very good question.
Would you possibly include a price point exclusion? Because these are inexpensive games in the grand scheme of games.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, if you like the games and they're cheap enough. I mean, all the Looney stuff's $20 or less. So
yeah. Okay.
That's just not exactly breaking the bank.
All right. Well, Mike, I don't know if that answered your question or not, but
it was kind of a... Way.
Cody sure did give it a shot.
Yeah. But very good question. And yeah. all of the Dice Tower people that have kind of come over and listened to us too, welcome.
Yeah. Yeah. Welcome to the show. One other little bit of information regarding the Jones Theory. Mm-hmm. We actually got a call in from Mr. Rafe Granger from the D6 Generation.
Oh boy,
who wanted to talk to us a little bit about the Jones Theory. So let's have a listen to what Rafe had to say.
All right, this is Rafe Hollywood Granger, and I thought I would phone in and leave you this voice message as John was so helpful in my last achievements in gaming on the D6 generation that I really appreciated it. So I wanted to return the favor and give you my comics on what I'm now going to call the Jones-Wakeland theory on culling down your game collection. So, John, you know, I hear you're trying to cull out your games, and I want to help you with that. So to add on to your co-host's theory, the Wakeland theory is to have the game broken down by theme, game mechanics, and number of players. So, for example, Battlestar Galactica and Shadows Over Camelot can exist in the same gamer closet as long as, or as you know, they have a different theme. But of course, they share this the same trader mechanic and the same number of players. Now, of course, you can drive yourself nuts parsing over the theme. You know, John, what I'm thinking, and you know, Cody, what I'm thinking, this is kind of just like an on-air Hollywood Minute, you know, for Game On. It's your own unique exclusive. So, John, you can drive yourself nuts. You know, is Agricola and Le Havre the same theme? One would argue probably not, but if you keep both, I bet you you'll find your game group is probably going to gravitate to playing one over the other, where one of them's just not going to be played. That leaves me to utilizing your brilliant listener's method of the sticker method inside the box lid. That's just brilliant. So I think what you do, John, is you use the Jones-Wakeland theory to parse your anticipated collection down, then you do the sticker method and see what's left over at the end of the year. Now, to sum up, I'm also not a pack rat. I offer you this when culling your collection. I'm one of these people that believes while your brain or body is filled up with all sorts of old stuff cluttering up your brain, you know, there's just no room for the new stuff to come in. It's kind of like, do you really ever find that great girlfriend while you're dating your old girlfriend? No, you know, out with the old, in with the new. That's what I say. Well, the same thing applies to your gamer closet. So, you know, open it up, embrace it with braveness and integrity and honor, and just cull those games out and leave room for the new. So, hey, happy new year, you all, and happy holidays. Take care.
All right, well, thanks, Rafe. And I don't think
braveness is a word.
I don't think so either.
Bravery.
Yeah, neither is Le Havre. But, you know.
English on.
You'll notice that he says Happy New Year at the end there and Happy Holidays. We actually got that email just before the last episode. We didn't have enough time to get it into that show. But Ray, thanks so much for those comments. So yeah. What do you think about what he had to say?
I don't know. The number of players thing. There's already the two-player exemption.
Yes.
With the Jones theory. And everything else, it's, you know, most, I guess, gamer games would be, if they're not two, would be 3 to 6. You know, four is usually kind of that magic number, but yeah. Some go to six. And I think so many of them fall into the same category. I don't know if it's worth breaking it down into player size, because once you get past six, you're in party games anyway.
It's what we were talking about before. How small do you want to make the buckets?
Yeah.
I mean, really, if you can make the buckets so small that you never get rid of any games because, oh, no, this is slightly different, you know?
Yeah.
I think your point is that you want to make the buckets as large as you possibly can make them, you
exactly.
know, so that you can really have the best games in your collection.
And if you think about it, the Jones theory as is already has the Wakeland thing, which we're not open for franchising right now, but
we
will open up opportunities at a great price point for you.
Yeah.
You know, it's got the exemptions built in because we exempt two-player games, and then we exempt party games, which is usually 6+.
Right.
So you've got that 3 to 5 in the middle. You know,
I think that's probably covered.
Yeah,
those
I think it's fine.
Yeah.
So, I won't send the cease and desist letter yet. There, Rafe. But no, I'm just joking. <Don't, with you. laughs>
for the usage of a Jones Wakeland theory phrase or concept there.
Yeah, okay. I don't know. Get some more work on it. We'll talk. We'll have a meeting.
Now, the comment about you'll never find that new girlfriend while you're dating your old girlfriend.
Yeah, I didn't get that.
I don't even know what that means. As a happily married man, I'm fine with my old girlfriend slash wife.
Yeah, exactly.
So thanks, Ray, for that great little mini segment there, a little Hollywood Minute.
A vignette, if you will.
Oh, very nice. A vignette, yeah. And, you know, feel free to call in anytime. You know, we'd love to hear from you. A couple more emails in the Game On inbox before we move on. And our next email is from Simon Wilcock in the
long
UK.
Long-time listener.
That's
God save the queen. Yeah.
Exactly. And he says, hey, guys, great show as ever. I'm catching up with the Resolutions episode. A huge backlog following Christmas and the new year. He says, podcasts are the commuter's friend, so I tend to store them up for when I'm back at the office.
Amen.
The same way. Yeah. And he says that it's great to hear Giles appear on the show, even though he said, if we were talking about a rivalry between Australia and New Zealand, should we not also bring into the context the ongoing rivalry between England and Australia?
What have we created?
Gosh, it's like this bad game of diplomacy. we've shown those Aussies a thing or two about cricket recently, and I know that Giles has been hurt by that. I don't know anything about cricket.
But baseball, there's a solid game. Go Reds.
American football, that's some good stuff there. Is it perhaps once he has settled his minor disagreement with that lump of rock off the coast of Australia, he can get back to the main rivalry with the mother country? There's just some vitriol
in that.
So he says, okay, verbal jousting aside, he had a question for you, Cody.
Oh, okay.
He says it's his ambition to appear in the Game On Inbox section. So
welcome.
We've now fulfilled that. He says, what are Cody's thoughts on online or play by email RPGs? So I noticed a few sites recently that seem to play online using regular forum software. One of the blogs that he follows recently had a post about Pathfinder being played in this way, and it really piqued his interest. He's also seen a few tweets from a site called Ongoing Worlds. Have you ever played this way over the internet? So would you recommend this approach for a beginner, especially one who's trying to get into the game but doesn't have much time to find and play with local opponents?
I've tried this once. One of my very close friends, he and his wife moved to Georgia from Indianapolis, and we kind of threw out the idea of doing a weekly game over the internet. I wouldn't necessarily recommend it for new players. And the play-by-post, I've never done that, but I think that would be a lot of work, checking that forum. And, I don't know if I'd want to do that. The way we did it was actually a combination of programs. I can't remember the main program we used for, showing a map and chatting. I apologize for that. But we used that in combination with Skype so we could actually talk. I think that's the most important part, is that you have some sort of instant verbal communication, even if you're doing it over the phone or if you have something like Skype or some sort of voice over IP, because I think typing out everything, the way banter and rules and things like that go in an RPG, I think typing it out is just going to be a slog.
For play by email, it seems like you just lose the timing of RPGs is so important, where you say, well, I'm gonna swing my sword at the troll, and then you don't find out for 2 days whether you hit or not.
I think the Skype method works a little better towards the more rules light RPGs, maybe even toward the more like Mouse Guard and Burning Wheel, very story first games where you're basically just talking, there's not a lot of maps involved, but it can be done. I wouldn't necessarily recommend it for a beginner. If you can't find a group locally, start a group locally. Did my spiel on that. The face-to-face element of it is underappreciated, I think. So if you can get that, definitely strive for that, and then maybe work into something where you can play online.
Now, with technology being the way that it is, I wonder if sometime in the future, when we all have those video phones that we thought we'd have 20 years ago.
On the moon.
Yeah. if you did have some with video chat and that kind of stuff, if you had multiple screens open and, you could all see, if you were all remote and you could see each other, would that...
Yeah. Well,
would that be something that might work?
The folks that do the Penny Arcade webcomic, they have, it's two guys. One of them's a hardcore video gamer, and the other one, he's a video gamer, but he played all the old editions of D&D. And with 4th edition, he got his video game only co-host into it, and he's running a campaign, and they actually have a setup, they've got the money to do this, where they do webcams and things like that, and they have a camera on the battle mat.
Oh.
So that the people, across the country can say, okay, they're seeing everyone at the table, and then in another window they're seeing the battle mat. So they can almost do move my guy 3 squares that way. You could even do battleship, move him to H7 and do this. And apparently it really, really works. So
that's cool.
If you've got the time and the equipment, that would certainly be an option.
Still no substitute for a face-to-face game.
And I don't think there will be.
Yeah. So. I mean, that's how I feel about online board games as well. They're great. Xbox Live Arcade is neat, but still no substitute for face-to-face gaming.
Exactly.
All right, well, that just about wraps up the email portion of the Game One Inbox, but hey, there's more to talk about, and the big thing that's been on our minds for the last few weeks is the Tom Vassell fundraiser.
The Tomathon, as it were.
The Tomic Relief. And Cody, why don't you tell us a little bit, give us a little update on how things are going with that?
Well, we've gotten... some new games in. We've got the Fantasy Flight games in.
Yep, a wide array of those.
Yeah, Middle Earth Quest was one of them. The Age of Conan game, a Cosmic Encounter,
Kingsburg
with expansion.
With the expansion,
so you can train to challenge me and lose.
yep. So I think that our prize package is pretty much set now. We have one more shipment coming in from Myriad Games.
Big shipment coming in.
Our great
in.
Sponsor, who are donating over $200 worth of games, including Tales of the Arabian Nights.
Oh, great game.
And Wits and Wagers 2nd Edition. So if you don't have Wits and Wagers, which yeah. you know, you should.
You know, I've talked to a few listeners where... you know, they're kind of new to gaming in general, and they entered the contest, you know, and I, or the fundraiser, whatever you want to call it, and I was telling them, and they agreed, you know, this is a great way to jumpstart your gaming collection for, you know, not a lot of upfront yeah. costs. So
yeah, basically, you're going to be getting about 30 new games, you know, just to start off. So if you don't have any games, you know, you'll have a 30 game collection if you win this contest.
Exactly.
Yep. So this is the last episode where we're going to be mentioning this
last chance
this, fundraiser, yep, and this great contest, because we're going to be making our doing our drawing on what was the day that we said?
The 29th.
The 29th of January.
Well, we're recording, our next recording is January 30th.
Right.
So the deadline would be the midnight on the 29th.
Right.
Eastern.
And then that episode will be released 2 days later.
Right.
On the, I think that would be the 1st of February is when the next show yes. comes out. Okay. So that February 1st is when you're going to find out who the winner is. So right now we have over 91, at the time of this recording, 91 unique donors and over 370 entries.
People are hedging their bets.
Yeah. So some people have donated a little, some people donated a lot, you know. And the way it works, if you hadn't heard before, is that for every $5 that you donate, you'll get one entry into the contest. Get your name one time into the hat. And so you can donate as much as you like, and we'll throw your name in that many times for each $5. And so, like I said, 91 donors, 370 unique entries. And as of right now, we have raised over $1,700
wow.
for Tom. And so that's just a great response. We yeah. thank you so much
thank
for
you very much.
For donating. But, you know, we'd like to push it even higher. I'd love to cross that $2,000 mark. That would be fantastic.
It'd be a huge blessing for Tom and his families. They prep to move wherever they move.
Yep, but to take care of all those expenses of getting Tom and the 6 kids and the wife and all of his stuff to his new location. So that's the basics of the Tom Vassell fundraiser. If you want to donate, all you have to do is go to www.gameonpodcast.com and look for the big blue banner right underneath our main banner. It says Tom Vassell fundraiser.
Can't miss it.
Yep. And even our regular donation button, if you click on that, it all kind of goes to the same email address, and all of the donations we get, even ones that are directed to just our show, until the end of the contest, will be all directed to Tom. And so we invite you to, you know, if you've already donated, if you think you might have a better shot with a couple more donations, throw them in there. We've had people do multiple donations.
I mean, it's the value you're getting is just, it's a heck of a kickstart to your game collection.
Yep. And Tom has done so much for the gaming community, and we've gotten some nice, real warm responses from folks just saying, you know, how much his podcast and his reviews have meant to them as part of their hobby. So, so great job to all of you who have donated.
All right, last call.
Yep. So, you know, stay tuned for our episode on February 1st, where you'll find out the big winner. All right, so let's move on to game news. And most of our news is convention related.
Gen Con related.
Gen Con related, which is our hometown convention here in the beautiful gaming capital of the world of Indianapolis.
We hope to see you there.
Yeah, definitely. And so for all of you who are interested in coming to Gen Con, I want to let you know that the badge pre-registration for Gen Con, which, you know, Gen Con's in August, but the badge pre-registration starts on Sunday, January the 24th. So just a few days after you're, you know, hopefully hearing this show, go and get your badge. So it starts at Sunday, January 24th at 12 noon Eastern Standard Time. And you have to go into their system called Ruby, which is their online registration system, and set yourself up an account. If you have already registered in the past, your account should probably still be active,
right.
And you can just log into it. But you know, for Cody and I, we don't ever get our badges too terribly early, mainly because, you know, we live here, and the only real benefit to getting a badge on the very first day is that you get a housing code.
Mm-hmm.
If you wanted to get a hotel room that's in the Gen Con block of hotels, they block off rooms and give special rates and stuff, then you don't get that special hotel code for the passkey system until you get your badge.
And we don't really need the hotels.
No, we don't. But for those of you who do, who will be coming into town, the badge registration is on that Sunday. And then the housing will open on Tuesday, January 26th at noon Eastern Standard Time. So once you get that little code in your hand there, you want to be sitting in front of your computer, because those hotel rooms, I believe they sell out pretty much in the couple of hours.
Definitely.
So if you want to get a hotel room in the block, you'll want to get involved in that.
And I'll say this, even though you may not get your badge right away, if you don't care about the housing code part of it, I think we mentioned this in our one of our convention episodes. For Gen Con especially, at least pre-register.
Yes.
Do not get your badge on site.
No.
You will miss half the con standing in line.
Yep. The very first day on that Thursday morning, there is usually a line that wraps all the way around the convention center.
Pre-register and have it mailed to you. I know some people have apprehensions about that. Don't go to Will Call. Get it mailed to you.
Yeah, I did Will Call last year, and it was okay, but it was okay because I showed up the day before.
Yeah.
Like, don't show up to Will Call on Thursday morning. That's a bad idea. But yeah, I'm going to do the mail thing this year as well. So the other little date that's a little farther in the future is that event pre-registration, which is for me even more exciting than the badge pre-registration, is Sunday, April the 11th at 12 noon Eastern Standard Time. And, you know, they usually release the event catalog a few days before. Sometimes not more than a week before, usually, because they're trying to get in all the events that people have submitted.
Yeah, I'm thinking of submitting our Game On kind of get-together as a seminar, maybe.
Yeah, we're still working out the details of that, but, yeah, we might throw that in as an actual Gen Con event.
We'll let you know.
Yeah. Gen Con's coming, so very excited about that. So be sure to check that out. And you know, regarding Gen Con, one of the big events that we like to do while we're at Gen Con is True Dungeon. Mm-hmm. And Cody, you have some information about some changes in True Dungeon this year.
Yeah, True Dungeon's kind of, they had announced a change back in September that they were going to be increasing the price to $46 a ticket. Pretty steep, but...
My goodness.
Yeah, that's a lot. But they were going to have... A lot of different dungeons have a big expanded tavern. Well, they've kind of changed that plan, and they've just announced to where they're going down to $40 a ticket, and they're going to have two dungeons. And the main one, they're pretty much like doubling the tickets for, I think.
Hmm.
And it's pretty much been touted and been revealed that you fight this big red dragon. It's the end of a story arc. And they have apparently, True Dungeon's known for its props and its kind of spectacle. And they've actually probably got this big dragon that they're going to be wheeling out. And
wow.
It's supposed to be pretty good. I know it sounds really dorky when you talk.
It's like a big paper mache thing. Yeah. No, it's good. The props are very cool, and, yes, and the monsters are usually pretty cool.
So they're going to have this main event. And then they're also going to have a second dungeon, which is a bit smaller and more puzzle-based. So there's two dungeons you can do. They have other events. They have something called True Grind, which is for the tokenaholics, for them just to fight for an hour. I think it's stupid, so we're not going to talk about it.
Okay.
But
say what we want, play what we want.
Exactly. So you've got those two dungeons. And if you're coming to Gen Con and haven't done True Dungeon, I'd definitely try and do it, because there's nothing like your first time when you do it. It sounds dorky as all hell when we talk about it, but it's one of the coolest events out there. There's not going to be a tavern this year, though, so that's a lot of the kind of cool factor goes away with that.
Yeah, so no bards contest.
No bards contest this year, no.
Oh, okay.
but so you got True Dungeon. This is your best chance to get a ticket. They changed the experience rules on it, because there's some people, some of the True Dungeon faithful, that will run three or four times just to get max experience. And the experience is so marginal anyway. You know, the rewards you get for it.
Yeah.
It just baffles my mind.
See, it goes back to my whole thing about I don't understand why people like tokens so much, because it's like, what do they really do for you? Not that much. But, but you know, people are into their things. You know?
So the skinny of it is $40 a ticket, a lot more openings for their main event, and no tavern. But they say it might come back. I don't think it will.
Now, I missed True Dungeon last year. I wasn't able to actually do a run. Mm-hmm. We tried to get tickets for Cody and I to do a run with family and stuff, and that didn't work out. I think you were still able to do a run, right?
Yeah.
But I really want to try to get it done this year. And actually, I've put some feelers out to possibly doing a run with a couple of other podcasters that you might not know. I'll just tease you a little bit, about that there might be a podcaster run of True Dungeon. So with recording in the dungeon, but definitely, even if it's just me and Cody going in, we will have the recorder with us. We will be giving you a play-by-play of True Dungeon.
Maybe we can interview the dragon at the end.
We'll see what he has
to
say.
So you breathe fire on us. How'd that feel? Well, I think this closes out our very spectacular and geek-tacular game on Inbox.
That's true. Let's move on to the big deal, where I'm going to go to school at the GM Academy.
Class is in session.
The big deal.
As far as deals go, this one's pretty big. Well, welcome pupils to the GM Academy, where I... Why are you laughing? This is serious business.
Oh, my God.
This is where my young student, John, will ask me, the GM professor, should I have a hat or something? A mortarboard?
Something like that.
But in all seriousness, John is going to be starting his... For real this time, his first foray into game mastering, and he has questions, and I know, based on the emails we've gotten, that a lot of you listeners have questions about, you know, kind of starting out as a GM, and I'm going to try and field his questions with my experiences.
Yeah, we're going to frame this sort of like an interview, just like me interviewing Cody about his wonderful GMing experience. Now, for all of you out there who have never even tried a role-playing game, you should. it's a really fun experience. and I found that I was someone who was really only involved in board games, and I just tried. I had a friend who was a first-time game master for Dungeons & Dragons, and he invited me because he said, you know, this is going to be first time for me too. It's kind of a learning thing for me. If you don't know D&D, come and play. I've got some experienced folks to sit with us. And so I learned to play at the same time he was sort of learning to be a DM. And I had a really great time and got involved in, you know, what role-playing is all about. And it's just a really fun, different aspect of gaming. So now I want to take the next step, where I've played in several role-playing games and con games and some campaigns. And now it's time for me to step up and try to be a game master.
Good man.
So I do have lots of questions. And I guess I want to ask you, Cody, just in general, can you just go through your process of how you became a GM? Now, you've been involved in role-playing games for a lot longer than I have, mm-hmm. you know, since you were a kid. And but I know that you probably started out as a player, like most people do, and then made the transition into being a GM. Tell me about your experience of how you started running your first game.
Okay. I started role-playing in general. It was 1997. I was a freshman in high school, and there were... A group I was in band with that, Magic the Gathering was my gateway, and they played that, and I would hear them talk about D&D, and, one of my friends' dads, who, Mr. G, if you've, James Gazaway from previous episodes.
Episode 14.
Very good. he ran a game, and people were talking about it, so I was interested. So I originally started with Dungeons & Dragons 2nd Edition, which was the current edition at the time. And they kind of took me under their wing, and the older guys, and they played, and they took myself and a few of my friends. We all learned at the same time, so they ran like a second edition game that we'd play, you know, like before school, and then on Friday nights I would go to the Gazaway's house, and he would run a first edition game. So I kind of learned them both at the same time. They're pretty similar in rules, so it wasn't that hard. But after doing that for a few years, I kind of wanted to. I'm a pretty creative guy, so you know I had ideas. It's like, oh, if I ran a game, I'd do something like this. So after a few years, I decided just to pick up a module and kind of read through it and try to run it. And the first one I ran was not very good, just because I was pretty young. I still didn't really grasp the rules. And back then, you know, I don't want to say back in the old days, it was kind of hard. It was harder to run a game for a first-time GM, because there's not a lot of the helps that exist now. You know, they just kind of have all the modules out there, and they say, you know, either learn it or you don't. And looking back, the module I had was a pretty crappy one anyway, so I was handicapped by that. Mm-hmm. So I had my
Tower of Gygax.
I forget what it was called. It was based around Sahagin, which are these like Murlocs, if you play World of Warcraft, or these like, you know, sea creatures, and it just wasn't a very good mod. And I tried to run it for my group, and they were a little skeptical because I was, you know, a new guy, and I ended up running it for like 10 people. So I did everything wrong. But you know,
10 people for your first shot.
Exactly. Yeah. Wow. So I did everything wrong, but I eventually really got into it. I like the idea of crafting worlds and crafting stories, and I just kept at it. I did a lot of reading on it, and I just kept running one shots and running a little short campaigns, and I've just kind of gotten better at it. I'm still not there, so to speak, but I'm a lot better than I was when I was running 10-man Sahagin Adventures.
Yeah, and you know, I've only known each other for what, 3 or 4 years now. And you know, the first game that I played in that Cody ran, I was really impressed by how good you are at it. You know, that Cody's a really good storyteller, and he's really good and quick with the rules. And maybe that brings me to my next question, which is, because I have 2 or 3 games that I'm thinking about, you know, running. I'm going to pick one, you know, the new Rogue Trader from Fantasy Flight, Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay, which I'll talk to you about a little bit more about that one in a second, because that's got some interesting aspects to it that are different. And then, of course, something like Wegg's, which is a much lighter sort of beer and pretzel sort of game. Now, that would be one that I might want to run as like a one-shot thing.
Right.
I wouldn't want to run a Wegg's campaign, I don't think. But I guess as I'm looking through all of these different books, I grasp the rules of D&D, D20, add your bonuses, and,
compared to a target.
Yeah, And I even know some of the basic mechanics for the rogue trader system with the percentile dice and with the is it percentile or percentile?
I say percentile.
Okay, all right.
You can say however you want.
Okay, don't want to be bashed for that one. Yeah. And then even the Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay, which uses a dice pool mechanic, which is very different. I'm just really worried about screwing up the rules. Mm-hmm. I get this impression, and it's just sort of the way I am when I teach board games, is that I want to know the rules cold. And if I have to look in the rule book, I feel like an idiot, and I feel like it ruins the game experience for someone else. We played Battlestar Galactica with Pegasus Expansion recently, and I'd only played it one other time. So I sat with the rule book quite a bit, answering questions about the rules, and everyone was real nice and everything. But I just feel like an idiot. I want to be able to sit down with a game and say, here's how you play, here's the deal, here's the rules, and I know them, and I don't have to look anything up. So one of my biggest fears about being a GM is that I'm going to get into a game and something's going to happen and I'm just going to be paralyzed and be like, oh, I got to look this up, or I don't know how this rule works. And I don't know how to overcome that, because I don't feel like I can sit down with the hundreds of pages of book mm-hmm. that come with a role-playing game and just know all the rules cold. So where is the balance there between knowing all the rules, which you really can't, and and not knowing enough to be able to run the game effectively?
Well, I'll say that I don't think there'll ever come a point where you know it cold, because I ran a fourth edition game last night, and that's a system I think I know very, very well. I know the rules very well, and every game there's always some little contingency that you would have never thought of that comes into play, and you have to make a snap judgment. So the most important thing is know the framework of the rules. It's like, how are the rules built in a big picture sort of thing? It's like, why does that give a +1 bonus or something, mm-hmm. things like that. And I think the most important thing is you don't really need to over prep. It's kind of like, if you know you're running your first game of something and there's not going to be a vehicle chase in it at any point, you don't need to read the vehicle chase's rules. I would say, focus on the basics, and that will allow you to make snap judgments better. And mm-hmm. That leads me to my second point, is you can't be afraid to make judgments on the fly. Just say, I don't know the rules for that off the top of my head. Unless it's like a character life or death situation, just say, okay, we'll give you a +2 bonus. We'll add an extra die. We'll do something.
Right.
The biggest mistake I think beginning GMs make is that they stop for every rules question and they look it up. And I think you just kind of have to keep your foot on the gas a lot of the time. And so you don't necessarily need to run a really, really fast game. But if it's not, if it's a difference between a +1 or +2 bonus, it's like just break in the favor of the players and keep going.
Okay.
And then it's good to make notes, because, I usually make notes. It's like, I didn't know the rules for that, didn't know the rules for that. And then I read it, and then I kind of know it.
Then you'll know it next time.
Right.
Because, I do that in board games all the time. I know I drive you nuts with that in board games, too, where we'll be in the middle of something, and I'll be like, I don't know what that rule is. And there's this uncomfortable pause, and then you just look at me and you say, go ahead and look it up. Yeah.
But board games usually have to look it up, because usually it's...
You can't even continue without it.
Right. Okay. But with RPGs, you really have to be the game master. You are running this game, and the... which is different from board games. The rules are there to help you tell a story and to help you have kind of an experience with your group. They are not set in stone. If your group wants to change something or you do something different on the fly, then do it.
Uh-huh.
And I think you have to accept that some of the things you'll have to look up all the time anyway. Like, for D&D, if you're using kind of the 3.5 and earlier method, you're going to have to look up some spells. You're not going to memorize that.
Right.
But I think the idea is just circumstance bonus something. Like, okay, you're doing okay. Give yourself +2 to that. It's like you just have to be able to adapt and go on the fly. If you get ground to a halt every time there's a rules question, then you're just going to get stuck. So learn the basics. Learn attacks. Learn damage, learn how skills work, get really good at that. Instead of reading the whole book, read those 20 pages over and over until you get it, and then you'll be in a much better position to make snap judgments as you need to down the road.
You know, I think that the Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay, and you're not familiar with that system, are you?
No, not at all.
Okay. I think that that dice pool mechanic allows for a lot of that sort of flexibility, because I think there's different kinds of dice that if something is, it would be the equivalent of giving you like a minus two or a plus two or whatever. You can say, you know, you're trying to jump out of a tree and hit someone with a sword, you mm-hmm. know, in the back of the head.
Yeah.
You know, that's going to be a complication. You can add some complication dice to make it you know, more difficult, and then you know you roll this entire pool of dice and then interpret it. So that leans me a lot more in that direction of that game, just because I like that idea. You know, I like being able to sort of on the fly just say, it's like with Hex, you know, just you know, you can sort of you know, give people style points for certain things, and you seem to have a lot of control over what's going on. And mm-hmm. Okay, so I'm not too scared about that then, I guess, you know, because yeah. I think part of it also for me is that I'm a people pleaser by nature. Mm-hmm. I think that's just sort of my personality. Every time I get people together for a board game group, my main concern is I want everybody to have a good time. I don't care who wins, you know, I definitely don't care if I win a particular game, even though I'll always play to win.
Right.
Mainly, I'm just concerned with people having a good time. And so with a board game, the game itself sort of generates the fun, you mm-hmm. know, and it's not so much dependent on individual players, although it can be that way. A role-playing game, it seems like it's so much dependent on the players and the GM being sort of in charge of those players. I guess, you know, it's just a personal hang-up, is that I just sort of feel like if I screw something up, or if I say, I'm going to give you a minus two to that because it looks difficult, then I'm going to have a whole bunch of people ticked off at me, you know, because they think that I'm not being fair or that I'm not doing something right. I can't say I've ever seen that in a game before, but that's one of my concerns.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But how do you handle that?
But the nice thing about being a game master is you get to pick your players. You know, it's not okay. like you're having these random people coming in, you know, bustling in and you know, who are going to grief you on every little thing. And I think, especially as a first-time GM, you need to say, look, you know, I'm definitely going to get some things wrong. I think you just need to come out and say that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to keep the game moving, and even though it's my first time, I'm going to get things wrong. Just kind of accept what I call and move along with it. And like I mentioned earlier, if you're going to do kind of an on-the-fly judgment or a bonus or thing, always break a little in the favor of the players. I'm not mm-hmm. saying make things always really easy for them, because the greatest fun comes from overcoming challenges.
Sure.
But, you know, if you're not, like I mentioned earlier, does cover give you a plus one or plus two to defense? Just give them the plus two, you know?
Yeah.
If it's life or death, you know, then really check it out. But
then increase the DC by five.
Yeah. You know, it's just, you have to have that kind of sit down at the beginning and say, you know, don't grief me over this. It's like, we're working on this together. And especially with Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay, you're in a nice position where, you know, whoever you get to play in your game, they'll never have played it either. You know, you would be in probably a different position if you're like, okay, I'm going to run a D&D game. It's my first time. You're still kind of shaky on the rules, where everyone else at the table knows the rules cold, you know.
Yeah.
That puts the GM in a tough spot. But
see, that's why I want to pick a game like Rogue Trader or Warhammer Fantasy mm-hmm. or Wegs, is that most of the people that I know don't know those games at all, because mm-hmm. I would hate to play run a D&D. I would hate to run a D&D game, because I know I don't know the rules as well as half the players that would be sitting around the table, no matter yeah. who I pick.
I mean, that's a good piece of advice in and of itself. You know, if you really if you really want to kind of get out there and get a group together and make the learning process easier, pick a game that no one knows.
Okay.
You know? I mean, there's multiple games in each genre that. You know, if you want to do fantasy, you don't necessarily have to do D&D. You can do Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay. You can do Desolation. You can do, you know, all sorts of other games. You can right. do Savage Worlds Fantasy if you want, you know.
Yeah. So going back to prep, you said mm-hmm. don't over prep. Give me just sort of an idea of how you prep for a game, and, you know, how soon in advance do you prep for each week? How far do you plan out your campaign? Just give me kind of some background on that to help me out with that.
Okay. I think early on, published adventures are your friend, or pre-made ones for new players. I even use it probably about 30-40% of the time. I'll just use, if I see a really good adventure, you know, in a dungeon or something, I'll use that and I'll just tweak it for my world. But if I'm making my own custom one, for D&D 4th edition, I'll use that as an example. I'll plan out the monsters in each encounter. You know, I'll say, okay, I'm realistic about it. I'm like, okay, they'll probably get this far tonight. If they get further than that, I can fudge it or just you know, say, okay, that's all we've got for tonight.
How do you gauge that? Is that just experience?
Just with your group. Okay. You kind of get a feel for how long they'll go through things. And even then, I'm sometimes wrong. Last night's session, they got a lot farther than I thought. The session before, they didn't get nearly as far as I thought. So,
have you ever ran a game where they did, where you ran out of content?
Oh, yeah. and you have to be upfront with them. You have to say, you guys have done a really good job tonight. You know, this is all I've got for you, but we'll hit it next week. You know, okay. And I'll even sometimes maybe give them a little bonus, you know, because they're not getting their full allotted time. But I think one of the Hex games that you were a part of, you guys got to the end of something quicker than I thought. And I was just like,
oh, yeah, I was kind of surprised that it ended so quickly.
Yeah, I'm like, well, that's all I got, you know, good okay. job. But as far as prep, I prepped the combat things because that's usually the crunchiest part rules wise. You know, I set in advance what monsters are going to be a part of it. And then everything else, I just jot down notes because I do any role-playing stuff. I just kind of list the NPCs, you know, what's going on. And I just do that fast and loose nowadays.
Hmm.
So I plan where the rules dictate planning. It's like, it's hard to plan role-play. You can't say, okay, the mayor is here. He's going to ask the PCs this, and he will have these responses if they ask him this question. Oh, so it's yeah. like, you have to just go. It's like, just write down what his motivations are, what his goals are, or just, you know, have them in your head. And then you'll be in a better spot.
Now, some of the games that I've played of D&D especially have kind of a puzzle aspect to them. You know, like you're looking for some runes that have mm-hmm. these things on them. And actually even the Hex game that you ran that a couple years ago, we had quite a few that were almost like these word puzzles that, yeah. you know, that you created. You know, what do you do in a situation where they don't figure them out? You know, my other concern is making things either too hard or mm-hmm. too easy. Too easy, I guess, you know, what you said is makes sense. You finish up, they do a real good job, you give them some bonuses, and then your next session you make it, you make it harder. But, you know, what about you don't want a total player kill, you know, your entire party.
Mm-hmm.
How do you keep from making it too hard?
Well, again, you're the game master. So, and I mean, it sounds really cliche and dorky, but you really are. I mean, the rules drive the engine of the story. But don't let it drive it off the cliff. It's like if the party is just getting beaten down, you know, dial it back. You know, have your monsters make maybe tactically odd decisions, or, you know, have their defenses go down a little bit. You know, some of the old school people are probably pulling out their hair right now. But I mean, you're there to play a group game and to tell a story. And if the PCs are just getting beaten down, and conversely, if the PCs are just mowing through the bad guys you thought would be tough like butter, it's like, bring in more of them, or have them, you know, drink a potion that increases their strength, you know, make it a challenge, you know, mm-hmm. make it, you know, don't railroad it, but make it how you want it to be.
And so all those on the fly decisions, they just come from experience, right?
Yeah.
I mean, just doing it. So.
Yeah. Just playing it. I mean, that's what's going to boil down to, is just the more you play, the more you'll, I mean, there's things you can't plan for, but mentioning the puzzles, there's kind of a, some people don't like having actual tangible puzzles in games, and some do. What I do is I put it out there. If the group solves it quickly, then good on them. I'm not going to let them stew over it for an hour. I mean, if I'll drop clues, and maybe if their character has high intelligence scores, you know, I'll give them some bonuses. But, you know, I don't let them stew. I'll give them hints, but at a cost. You know, it's like, yeah. Well, you know, you can get this hint, but something may be harder down the road.
A haggard old beggar walks up and hands them a piece of paper that has the answer on it.
Right, yeah. But it's like, I will never... I was in a game once where we were working on a puzzle for like an hour and a half.
Oh, geez.
And it's just like, if you don't know it, you don't know it. You know, you can spend forever on it, you're not going to get it.
Yeah, yeah.
So...
Okay, so... Yeah, you know, what I'm sort of hearing overall here is this concept you're saying, you are the game master. Mm-hmm. And you know, as a board gamer, and listeners who are listening who are board gamers, you know, you might agree with me that, you know, we sort of live in a world as board gamers where we're governed by the rules of the mm-hmm. game, and they're very, very strict, you know, and we like that, you know, we like that box that we're inside of, that even if you're playing Descent, you know, which is not a role-playing game, it's very much a board game, but mm-hmm. it's on that sort of borderline.
Yeah.
But, you know, the thing I like about Descent is that the rules are very cut and dried, and, you know, there's very little ambiguity to them. And that makes it a fun sort of a tactical game. But in a role-playing environment, it's a lot more fluid.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, maybe that's something I just sort of need to embrace a little bit more, is this fluidity of it. Because so much of me wants to say, well, you know, you said, is it a plus one or a plus two bonus? You know, well, the book says that it's plus one. It needs to be a plus one. You know,
well,
I need to go and look it up and make sure it's a plus one. You
know? if you know that it is.
No, I'm not talking, and I'm not even talking about changing it if mm-hmm. you know it. But, I mean... I have to fight the urge to, you know, well, I don't know this, but, you know, because, you know, that board game aspect of, well, if it was a board game and I don't know if it's a plus one or plus two, I got to look it up to make sure.
Yeah. And you know, 90% of the time I'm doing rules as written. You know, I don't want people to think I'm just kind of making up everything as we go along.
Sure.
But, you know, it's the 10% that kind of make or break it. You know, it's, you know, the snap decisions, you know, can he be shifted while he's prone? You know, well, you know,
I don't know.
We'll say yes. You know,
okay.
You know, whatever helps you guys right now.
Okay, so one other thing, or a couple other things, one that was want to hit on real quick, pieces of advice for me.
Mm-hmm.
Recommended number of players for a first time GM.
I would say depends on the system. I'd say no more than five. I would say four.
Four plus the GM or four total?
Four players.
Four players.
Yeah,
and four
you could even. I know Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay even has, you know, set for three.
I think it's designed initially for three plus the GM.
Do so. That. Do no more than five at the most, and I'd say the lower the better.
It's just too much to keep track of.
Yeah, just don't lone wolf and you're fine.
Lone wolf.
Yeah, don't do that. For Warhammer, I'd say do three. For any other game system, four is a good number.
Okay. And would you recommend, you know, doing just a one-off thing to start off with, or should I start off with the idea that I'm going to do a certain number of week campaign or a certain number of sessions? Or
I would say,
answer carefully because you're going to be playing in this game.
Yeah, I mean, I want to play in it. But I would say, that's a tough one. I'd say do a one-off with an opt to extend, you know.
Okay.
Whereas you do the one-off, you gauge the reactions, and if the people liked it, you know, have it to where the story could end there,
uh-huh.
which I imagine is the Warhammer stuff probably. The pre-generated adventures,
yeah, I think like that. In the DM guide that comes with the game, there's an adventure. Yeah,
have it to where there's a conclusion there. But if so, after the game, you say, hey, you know, everyone have a good time, you know, yada yada yada. Okay, how about we do this again in 2 weeks?
Okay,
and we'll keep going. You know, but you know, have where you can do it as a one-off, but have that option to continue if it clicks.
Okay, well, so do you think I can do it?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you'll be fine.
I'm not a bad storyteller. I think I'm okay at that. It's just
it's
mainly the rule stuff that's just kind of hanging me up. So,
all
right, well, that's real encouraging. And you know, and this is by no means, listeners, a staged conversation, because this is a conversation we actually haven't had yet, and so we decided to just turn the microphones on and have it right now. So, that's really good advice, and I really do plan on picking my game. I really think it's going to be Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay.
You spend $100 on it.
No. Remember, I got
it through
my company work program. There,
you worked for it. Yeah. So,
And you know, just real quickly to mention that particular game, since I'm leaning towards it, that's a game that has, you know, in addition to this cool dice mechanic with the dice pools, it also has a lot of components involved in it too. You know, it has little tokens. You know, actually, it has stand-up tokens for your characters, and it also has these tokens that sort of represent spatial relationships. You know, not like a board, but it sort of you know, has a general sort of, rather than having a grid like a Chessex grid or something.
It looks a lot like, these are products I'd recommend to people too. Like, you know, I know D&D 4th Edition has a starter set, which is meant for a group that has never played, and one person will be the DM and the other people will be the players. It reminds me of that, like a nice bridge between board gaming and RPG. So don't feel like buying a, I'm not saying Warhammer, you know, this is a beginner set, but you know, for the D&D sets and other games, don't be afraid to buy the beginner stuff thinking it's for kids, because it's really not. It's meant for anyone that just hasn't had the fun of role playing yet.
So if you have a board game group and you're not, and you don't have a lot of role players around, and you know, and the four or five of you in a group decide, hey, let's try this role playing thing, you know, that would be something you would recommend.
Oh yeah, I would recommend something like the D&D, I think it's called the starter set or something like that.
Because
there you still have your options are limited. You know, you're not just opening this 300 page player's handbook and being like,
what is this?
You know, it tells you, as the GM, do this, this, and this. As the players, do this, this, and this.
Yeah.
And they have pre-generated stuff, and you can jump right in and learn. That's the best way to learn, is just keep playing, and you know you're going to make mistakes, but work through it and you're going to have a good time. Just don't let the rules drive you off a cliff.
Okay, good advice.
Thank you.
All right, so I'll be giving you, you know, much more information as we go forward and in future episodes about my adventures into GMing. So, yeah, I think the WFRP there is going to be what I'm going to give it a shot. So I'm going to start focusing on that one, I think, and learning the rules of that and teaching you.
Oh.
So that should be exciting. So I hope this was useful conversation for you listeners out there who might be interested in role-playing and maybe wanting to take that jump off the cliff, as it were, into GMing. So thank you, Professor Cody, for your sage wisdom. All right, well, that just about wraps up the big deal. We're going to move into our buy try tonight. We're going to take a look at the new game from Asmodee Editions, Claustrophobia.
Buy, try, or deny.
Game reviews for the common gamer.
It's that simple.
This is a place where eternally fire is applied to their body. Teeth are extruded and burned to ground and baked into cakes which are passed around.
I hope you have no medical conditions, because claustrophobia is about to be experienced.
Oh my.
That was bad. But anyway, we're reviewing the game Claustrophobia.
Well done.
And so John is going to give you his patented rules breakdown, and then we will discuss this hellish game.
All right, so Claustrophobia is from Asmodee Editions. It came out in 2009, and it was designed by Croc.
Like the shoe?
Spelled the same, yeah. I have no idea who this person or group of people is, but it just says a game by Croc.
Okay.
So, the Croc.
Good for Croc.
Yeah, good for Croc. This game is set in the universe of Hell Dorado. And we looked online to see if it's like a comic book or a graphic novel or something. I couldn't really tell.
No.
Except that I think there was like an older board game called Hell Dorado by Asmodee and Croc that maybe got turned into this. I'm not really sure what the deal is, but anyway, the idea is that it's in the year 1634, and for some reason, I don't know if the people on Earth need land or something, and so they decide to storm the gates of Hell and go into like the caverns under the Earth to Hell to get real estate or something. And
FC Tucker.
Right. And so you have this character called a Redeemer who is leading this underground expedition in the name of New Jerusalem. I guess that's the city. And, you know, he's got his hammer and a lantern and, you know, his faith. And he is leading this group of people. But I guess, you know, when he tried to go get conscripts for this mission, the only folks he could get were condemned prisoners.
Well, not exactly, you know. Oh, sign me up for that.
Well, I know, right? So you have these other kinds of characters, the Condemned Brutes and the Condemned Blades, who will join the Redeemer in this adventure. So this game is a two-player sort of tactical strategic miniatures game with a modular board. So it has similarities to Descent, although I would say it has more similarities to Space Hulk in the way that it's played.
I agree.
But it also has some unique aspects that are really just unique to Claustrophobia. So so like I said, two-player game, and in this game you're going to play some sort of a scenario, and there's five or six of them in the game with different objectives. The board consists of these tiles. There's 36 tunnel and room tiles. You'll usually start off with all your guys on one of these tiles, and you have to get to a certain location. The initial adventure is that you're trying to follow this breath of fresh air to get out of the caverns.
It ends up being really convoluted there toward the end.
That's true. Well, I guess you think it's a breath of fresh air, but then you end up in a dead end, and you have to go another direction. So, but I thought it was not a terrible mechanic. So, it's got these nice pre-painted miniatures that come with it. There's the miniature for the Redeemer. And then you also have two miniatures for the Condemned Brutes and two for the Condemned Blades. So you can have a team on the human side of up to five players. And then on the demon side, you have 11 of these miniatures called Troglodytes, which are these little demonic little dog people sort of things. And you have 11 of those. And then you have one miniature that represents the greater demon. And that the statistics of that demon are represented by these cards. And so depending on what scenario you're playing, you might have a different name for what this demon is, but there's just one miniature that represents who the big bad is in that particular scenario. Much like Space Hulk, the troglodytes kind of, if they die, they just go off the board and you just can keep respawning them, you know, in different places. Although the giant demon, usually you have a limit to the number that you can do, have of that kind of dude. So, you know, you'll set up your initial starting conditions for whatever your scenario is. And here's sort of how the gameplay works. You're going to start off in the very first phase of the game, and it's called the initiative phase. And this is when your human player is going to determine the statistics of their warriors. Now, if you've ever played the newest version of Formula D by Asmodee, you'll know that they have this new little component in the Formula D game where it's sort of a tray and then a cardboard thing that sits on top of it. And that's where you would keep track of all of your gears and settings on your car. There's a very similar thing in Claustrophobia where you have this little tray and a cardboard thing that sits on top to keep track of the stats of your human characters. And so you'll have one of those for each of the characters that's in the game. And in the initiative phase, you're going to roll a number of D6 that represents the number of guys that you have in your team. And then you're going to take each of those dice and assign it to one of your characters. On the player boards, there's a list of statistics, and there's each guy has three statistics: movement, combat, and defense. And then there's a line for each value on your die, 1 through 6. So if you assign, like for example, for your Redeemer, if you assign it a die with a 1 on it to that guy, then he's going to have a movement of 1, a combat of 3, and a defense of 3. But if you had a die with a 6 on it and assigned that to your Redeemer, he would have a movement of 1, a combat of 1, and a defense of 6. So based upon what the die you decide to assign to the guy, will determine what their stats are for that particular turn. And it's just for that particular turn, which is very interesting, that's going to change each time. At the beginning of every turn, we'll have this initiative phase. In addition, the Redeemer is going to have a couple of special gifts, which are represented by cards that he has that will help him. And, you know, he's sort of the leader of his team, will help the team out as well. And those are on the cards for those different gifts have a die value listed on them. So, for example, something called the Aura of Precognition, which helps you to sort of deter know ahead of time what tiles, you are coming up in the dungeon. If you have a value of 5 on your die, then you can activate that gift. So that can help you make your decision as to which value you want to use for each guy, you know, based upon those gifts. In addition to that, each of the characters is also going to have some sort of a talent that's listed on the card that will allow them to do certain things. That's all listed in the in
dancing,
the book.
Playing the clarinet,
dancing, playing the clarinet, tax accountant skills, you know, things like that. So you're going to do this initiative phase, roll all your dice, and then place them into these locations. Now, one thing to keep in mind is that the way that damage is dealt in this game is that if a character is dealt damage, they have to take one of these little pegs and they have to place it in one of those 6 rows of statistics. So, and that would mean that in a future turn, you would not be able to use that row of statistics. So if the Redeemer gets hurt and he chooses to put a little peg in the number 2 slot, then the next time the dice are rolled in the initiative phase, you could not put a 2 die into his slot. You could, I guess, but then he wouldn't be able to do anything that turn. He would basically be exhausted and he'd have to sit there, and he'd have a much lower defense if he got attacked. From a component standpoint, this is very cool because you actually take the die and you put it into this tray. There's a slot for it. So it sits there so you know the entire time of that turn what row you're supposed to use.
I think Asmodee had a surplus on trays.
Yeah, they must have.
They're like, yeah, we'll put them in the Hell game. That was good.
But I thought that was kind of cool.
Oh, it's cool. I just think it's funny that both of those games have trays.
Little plastic trays, yeah. New Asmodee thing, I guess. After the initiative phase, you're going to have the human player's action phase. And so during that phase, the human player's warriors are going to move and explore the tunnels and do combat and that kind of stuff. So like in the first scenario, you all start off in this one room in the very middle. and then you're going to explore, and it takes one movement point to explore, in which case you'll basically move your guy to a particular opening or doorway, and then there'll be a stack of face-down tiles. You'll turn over one of those tiles and place it you'll give it to the demon player, and the demon player will actually place it onto the board in a particular orientation of their choosing, and then you'll place the character into that room. Now, the different room tiles have different features on them as well. And there's little icons that indicate what they do. And they could be things like a flooded tunnel or some sort of a booby trap tunnel. There's even something called a tight tunnel, which will limit the number of guys that can be in that tile at any one time. So you're going to be moving around. And you know, in this first scenario, you're trying to follow this breath of fresh air to get out. And the fresh air is represented by a 10-sided die. So every time you add a tile, you'll increment that die upward. And once you get to 10, then you will kind of magically find the exit tile. So like I said, that's just for the first scenario. The other scenarios have some other things that you have to do. But so in this case, you're kind of exploring around. If you happen to be in a space with a monster, then you can fight the monster. The combat in this game is very, very simple. It's basically you take your combat statistic and you roll that number of D6. And then you're going to compare each one of the dice that you roll to the defense value of whatever you're fighting. And each time for each individual die, if it beats that value, then that's considered a hit. So if someone's rolling 4D6, they could potentially deal 4 damage. But it's just taken that way on an individual die basis. So the troglodytes, for example, all of them have just a defense value of 3. So they're pretty easy to kill. Anything on a 3+ is going to kill them. And so you'll do your combat if you want to. You can do combat and move, or do move and then combat, but you can't kind of split it up in the middle like you could in Descent. I think you could do a half move and then an attack and then another half move. You can't do that in this game. After the human players have done all of their actions, then you're going to have what's called the threat phase. This is the beginning of the demon players phase. And this has a very interesting mechanic that resembles another game that we really like called Kingsburg. Yep. wouldn't expect to see this in a game about demons and stuff. But the demon player has a large board that represents all of the troglodytes. And there's all of these different spots on this board. You're going to roll 3d6. And then you're going to take and apportion those dice and place them onto the boards based upon what scores you get. And then, much like Kingsburg, you're going to get some kind of benefit or resource based upon which dice you put there. So, for example, if you rolled any die score, it's kind of like the lowest one, you could throw dice into one pool, and that would allow you to roll an extra die on your next turn. So if you got kind of a crummy hand and didn't like what you got, you could sort of save up for the next time. But for example, if you happen to have one odd die and one even die amongst those three, you could place those into one box and you would get the They Are Legion ability. And it says all troglodytes would gain +1 defense until the beginning of your next threat phase. And you would also gain 2 threat points if at least one troglodyte was killed during the human phase of the last turn. Threat points are the way that you're able to spawn the guys onto the board. You'll get a certain number of threat points at the very beginning of the game. And then after you've placed your dice on this board, then you can spend your threat points to spawn the troglodytes and the demons. The troglodytes cost 1 threat point to spawn, and the demons usually will cost 5 threat points to spawn. And there's some special rules about how you can place them on the board. You can't place them into a tile that has any human players in it. And you also have to place it onto a tile that has a visible exit. So you might get into a spot. I played the demon player in the game that we played, and I found there was a couple of times when I couldn't spawn anything because I just wasn't able to find a space for them to go. The other thing that the demon player has at their disposal is an event card deck. And so if you have at least one die with a score of 3 or more, you can place that die into this particular box on the board, and you can choose to draw an event card. And the event cards do a lot of interesting things. One thing in specific is that you can, I think it's called burrowing demons or something like that, where you actually can place a troglodyte into an area that doesn't have an exit in it. So like kind of it's burrowing up through the floor. So you'll do that threat phase where you'll put your dice in all the places that you want. You'll spawn your guys. And then the demon player is going to have an action phase, which is the same sort of thing. They can move and attack or attack and move. And the same sort of resolution for combat. And then you're going to go back to the initiative phase. They'll, you know, the human player will take all those dice out of those trays and will re-roll them again. And so as far as combat damage, I mentioned that if a human player is dealt combat damage, they're going to have to put a peg into one of those rows. As far as demon combat damage, each troglodyte has one hit point. So if you hit them, then they die. The demon will have a certain number of hit points based upon which demon it is. And there'll be a card that represents that. And they'll have tokens for wounds that you can put on the card to represent that. So the game just basically continues until the victory conditions are met on one or the other side. And that's the basics of the game. Now, just kind of to start off to talk about the components in the game. You know, I told you a little bit about them being pre-painted miniatures and tiles and things like that. But I want to emphasize that I think this game has just absolutely top-notch components.
It's a beaut.
I'll give it an A or an A-plus on components. The miniatures look very good. You know, for you miniatures painters out there, they're not quite to that level of painting, but they're pretty good. They're better They're better than HeroScape miniatures,
yeah.
I think.
They're serviceable. They're
exactly. and then the artwork on all the tiles is very, very good. I think the artwork on the cards is well done as well. So what do you think about the components?
I thought they were very good.
Okay, very good. All right. Well. And then as far as gameplay goes, Cody, I've been talking for 15 minutes now. Why don't you give me your impressions about the gameplay of Claustrophobia? What did you think?
I thought when we were about halfway through the game, I'm like, this may just be like kind of a poor man's Descent, you know?
Yeah.
But as we played more, it plays more like Space Hulk, but it has a lot of, dissentient elements in it as well. You know, it's this game I can't put my finger on. John had asked me earlier in the week, he's like, so Jones Theory, where does this one stand? I'm like, boy, I don't know. It's got, it borrows this from Kingsburg. It borrows this from Space Hulk, this from Descent. It's got mechanics all new. I just don't know where to put it. I want to play it again. Like when we were done, we ended up playing to a draw.
Right.
but I've been thinking about it. I'm like, I'd like to give that game another go, but it's just, it's really hard to categorize, where I'd put it. The gameplay is, I think once you get the rules down, it's actually a pretty quick system.
Yeah. It feels clunky at first, I think.
It feels really clunky at first.
Yeah.
And then it just becomes kind of, you have that aha moment. And it really kind of speeds along. It's interesting. Like I said, it's just a very odd bird to categorize.
I think as far as the clunkiness goes, what I was feeling the most was that the movement is every character has pretty much like one movement point. I think there's only a couple of die spaces that you can, where you would get more than one movement point.
Right.
So I'm used to games like Space Hulk or Descent where within each room or whatever, you might have a bunch of tiles and you're used to like hopping your little guy, I'm going to move forward, hop. Yeah. But here, you just kind of sit on this tile. And so one movement moves you from one tile to the next.
Yeah, that was interesting.
And so the movement feels very different. One thing I didn't mention just rules-wise that's interesting is that there's a rule called the rule of the blocking rule, which is that if you are in a square, let's say you've got two of your human players there and there's three troglodytes in there, the human player cannot leave if there are more enemies in the tile than there are good guys. So if you have more of your opponents to miniatures.
Right.
If there's more figures there, then you're not allowed to leave. So it's sort of a different way of doing like an engagement in HeroScape or Attack of Opportunity kind of a thing in D&D. But I really liked it. Like you said, about halfway through the game, I was going, I'm not so sure. Boy, this is a expensive game and great.
Yeah.
But by the time we got to the end of the game, we were both standing up and, and
chucking dice.
Yeah, chucking dice. And I played a couple of really timely event cards that helped me to get to a draw because Cody was getting to the point where he was going to win. So, I think it's really good. And as far as Jones Theory goes, theme wise, I don't know any other game that has this theme.
Real Estate and Hell. No, that's a fresh one.
Very different. And mechanics wise, I agree that it's really hard to place. It's not really it's not really enough like Space Hulk to say that it's another Space Hulk. It's not really enough like Descent to say it's another Descent. And it's definitely not like Kingsburg to make it another Kingsburg.
Kingsburg in hell.
But, you know, so therefore, I think it might have a place in one's collection using the Jones theory there. So let's move on to our ratings. Cody, Claustrophobia, our first review of 2010.
I know.
By Try or Deny.
First, I don't understand why it's called claustrophobia. I mean, I get that they're down, you know, in the
tunnels. Yeah,
but that's, I don't know. That's like calling Descent sweat because you're running around a dungeon and you're like, oh, it's getting real sweaty in all this armor.
Good point.
You see what I'm saying? I don't know. The name is weird, but I give it a try. I give it a try because it may just not click with you. It's got a lot of kind of disparate elements to it, and I could see where someone would just not really get into it. Personally, I would like to get it. I would like to at least play it some more, and I don't need to get it because you bought it.
Right.
But it's a try just because it has all of these different elements that may or may not work for you, and the fact that it's only a two-player game. You know, that's not a bad thing, but, you know, I could see where certain tweaks could have been made to this game to have it accommodate more players, and it wouldn't have been that hard. Those are my two things. Some people get kind of bent out of shape about the theme. I don't really care. It's no different than Doom, in my opinion, as far as that goes.
Yeah.
But yeah, the fact it's two players and the fact it's kind of a mishmash of elements, I think it's cool that it has all these different mechanics, but some people may think it's just way too clunky and messy and may not want to screw with it. So I like it, but I will give it a try.
Okay, fair
so,
enough.
John, Real Estate in Hell, Buy, Try, or Deny.
Well, I will give Claustrophobia a try as well, but it will be a try.
Here we go.
With a little asterisk next to
it. Oh, my God.
That says...
steroids?
No. That says Jones Theory approved.
Oh, very nice.
That, you know, it's still, like Cody said, it's, you know, the theme might not hit you quite the right way. I don't have any really real problem with it, but... you know, the gameplay might, you know, not be the best for you. I mean, if you're a Eurogame fan, this is by far an Ameritrash of Ameritrash games, you know. But I think it's got a lot of elements to it that are different enough that it you know, you give it a try. You know, I think you're going to find some real tight tactical games and fun card play, fun dice play, and I love the having to choose those dice for your initiative each time. That, you know, Cody got down to the point where, you know, where I'd almost killed a couple of his guys, where he was having to make really tough decisions about where he was going to put his dice, you know, to keep one of his guys.
Felt like a Euro game there for a second.
A little bit.
All the decisions.
So, but I will give it that asterisk of Jones Theory approved, because we can't really find, you know, if you like this enough from hearing this review to want to put it in your collection, we would say that it is Jones Theory ready.
I think we have to add that into the review.
I think that's a good new thing for 2010. Whether it's Jones Theory approved or not.
So Claustrophobia, two tries and a Jones Theory approved.
That's right.
Good idea.
I'd like to be the one to see your loving mind at the start.
All right, well, that wraps up what we think is another successful episode of Game On with Cody.
I hope so.
Well,
it wraps it up.
Exactly. You can find us online at gameonpodcast.com. And if you want to send us any emails, questions, perhaps you have some GM Academy questions or just general feedback, you can reach us at the Game On Inbox.
That's gameoninbox@gmail.com.
We love hearing from you guys and gals, and just keep it coming.
Yep, and you can also check out our guild on BoardGameGeek.com. That's guild number 576. And we've got forums there, some image galleries, and we need to kind of get some conversations going in that guild. It's gotten a little bit
The holiday break has made it a little stale.
I think of some interesting things to talk about in the guild there. We also want to remind you about the Tom Vassell fundraiser. This is your last call.
Last chance for it.
Last chance to enter this great contest where you could win over 30 brand new games and help out a great gaming podcaster and friend, Tom Vassell. So be sure to go to GameOnPodcast.com and click on the banner and donate early, often, and a lot.
Absolutely.
Well, join us in 2 weeks where we'll have another great big deal topic, and we'll also be taking a look at more new hotness in the area of deck-building card games, and that's Thunderstone from
AEG.
Could
it be the Dominion Killer? We'll see.
I don't know. We'll check it out. But until then,
go Colts and game on.